Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the generous support of Meyer Bramley Insurance, serving Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas. Meyer Bramley Insurance can be reached online at mbi.agency or via phone at 844-890-2626. Catholic Conversations, where we talk about faith, family, and finance.
We are back, Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5 in Bloomington, and now also 88.3 in Pontiac, the great metropolitan of Pontiac. We have a fantastic guest with us today. Father Sable is with us from Pontiac, from St. Mary's. And you guys have a couple other parishes, right? Not just Pontiac.
Yeah, they got St. Joseph's in Flanagan. I got St. Mary's in Lexington and St. Joseph in Shenandoah.
Wow.
So those are my part of my vicariate neighbors right there.
So, you get a little bit of windshield time on a weekly basis.
Yes. Yes, we do. My two assistants, Father Adam Cesarek and Father Bill Keebler. Yes, we float around a little bit. So.
Awesome. Well, we're thrilled to have you with us.
Glad to be here.
Absolutely. And we're thrilled to have the greater Pontiac metropolitan area listening to Catholic Spirit Radio. It's been a productive 3 years, I guess, probably almost, since I've been with Catholic Spirit Radio. And John, our fearless co-leader to God, has done a fantastic job of growing the reach of Catholic Radio in Central Illinois. So we'll pat him on the back.
Now, we enjoyed the older gentleman. I don't know who it was that came up to at our church and promoted Catholic Spirit Radio. He did just a wonderful job. His energy was...
Bob Johnston.
I think so. Yes, it was Bob Johnston. He just did a wonderful job of promoting Catholic Spirit Radio, and
Yeah, Bob.
Getting people fired up a little bit. So
yeah,
good.
Bob and his wife Lynn were my RCIA instructors at Epiphany 10 years ago now.
Well, welcome to the faith.
Yeah, thank you.
That's tremendous.
Thank you. We were talking a little bit before we started. Some folks might look at you and not realize that you're a newer priest.
A newbie, I call myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a teacher before for about 18, 20 years dealing with kids with special ed needs and behavior disorders in the Quad Cities. And as also a union plasterer, also in construction. I like the balance of getting done teaching in the summertime and saying goodbye with the academics and jumped over to the construction side for 10 years. Actually, I went to did the plastering for 10 years and then jumped back in education. But when I got back into it, then I just did it in the summertime. Went in for I call it the gravy work of the plastering world in the summertime. And jumped back into teaching again and finally started teaching full-time with these kids in special ed, which was a very good ministry for me. For 18 years. It was a tremendous challenge, but I did that before the Lord called me. I was getting close to being about 50 years old, going like, hey, man, God, dealing with these behavior disorder kids is a little physically strenuous at times, you know. Might be in new direction, and all of a sudden it popped up, you know. So in dealing with the challenges and the call, and he said, yeah, he led me in this direction, yeah.
Now, were you raised Catholic?
Oh, yeah. I have come from a beautiful family of 10 brothers and sisters, all a bunch of cheeseheads, really, from Wisconsin. My parents' family were Wisconsin. And
I guess we won't hold that against you.
Yeah, there you go. They do up in Pontiac.
Well, I'm sure they
do. I'm a Packer fan, you know, and holy cow, I get the calls, you know.
But yeah, just, you and the one other guy up there.
Yeah,
you
know, there's a few other
Is
ones.
There?
But no, but I love it. You know, we have a great time. And great family in Rock Island I grew up in. And both my parents are passed away, but my family and my brothers and sisters are still pretty close, even though it was spread. I'd say we are all officially everybody's east of the Mississippi River somewhere. So we stay in contact with one another, and I think my parents did a good job of raising us. It's a pretty solid Catholic family, yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty proud of them.
You know? Awesome.
Say, I tell my mother passed away, and I said my mom was a saint, and I got to say that when I was a priest, you know, and my dad passed earlier, so I was not a priest then. I was just a layman. But mom's a saint, and dad's a work in progress, I still say, you know.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, good. I think pretty solid Catholic family overall, yeah.
I would venture to guess that becoming a priest later in life probably presents, I would think, some benefits to relating to your parishioners, maybe in ways that priests that are, you know, go to high school, go to college, become a priest right out of the seminary, might not have some of the life experiences. Yeah. I know a lot of times you get that complaint sometimes with, well, Father so-and-so can't relate to me on whatever the issue is. Have you found that to be a benefit in your ministry?
Oh, yeah. I think it's been a tremendous benefit, you know. But I tell the people, especially the assistants I got, well, Father Adams, my youngest assistant, you know, and I have, but I tell them, I said, hey, I says, it doesn't take long for these younger guys to get a lot of experience under their belt quite quickly, you know, especially Father Cesarek is actually one of the older guys, you know, he was ordained a little older in life too, you know, to a certain degree. But for me, the life experiences, yeah, because for me, I always consider myself more of a pastoral priest, you know, than, say, an academic. I was never really consider myself a true academic. And when I went into seminary, you know, and I've had some great priests that guided me along, you know, Father Jerry Logan, who was our families went through grade school together. So I know Father Jerry for a long time. And but he was also my pastor at Our Lady Guadalupe in Silvis when I had gotten to this stage. And I asked him, I said to him, and then I says, do I need to be a brainiac to get through the seminary? He goes, no, Dave, you don't have to be a brainiac, but you got to grind it out. I go, well, I said, that's something I usually do in my life. I can be a little bit of a grinder. So, and went for it. And it was my first semester, I was in the chapel and doing holy hours a lot, you know, and trying to get ready for my first test and things like that. But once I got through my first round of tests, I always remember my patristics exam with the academic dean of our seminary in his first year. So he would definitely threw the books at us a little bit, you know, a lot of reading and stuff like that. But my advisor, who's a great friend of mine, Father Jim DePerry up in Boston, I says, Dave, read what you can. Do what you can. Don't worry about it so much. And that was just some great advice he gave me. And I ended up acing, actually, my first patristic test. And after that, it was just a great experience for me at Pope John at 23rd National Seminary in Weston, Massachusetts. That's where the delayed vocations went to at that point in time. So at least that's where Peoria sent me at that point in time. I always thought I was going to go to Holy Apostles in Connecticut. But that time, he said, no, we're not sending people there anymore. We're going here. It's a great fit for me because I am a sports guy.
Yeah.
You know, and when you got the Celtics, you got Patriots, you got, you know, everybody under the sun, the Red Sox. And I tell you, I got to go see a lot of nice games for nothing. So
nice.
I'm pretty happy about that.
So one of the perks.
One of the perks, especially when they call you up from the seminary, they'd say, hey, Dave, I got this seminarian coming in from Germany who's never seen a baseball game before. Would you take him there? I'm sure. Well, sure, I'd love to, you know. So, a lot of good perks. It was a great environment for me. I mean, because, you know, if you look at Boston, that's known as that's where scandals began somewhat in Boston, you know. But it was really an eye-opening to watch how that community of priests really got stronger in the face of, you know, some of the problems they had up there, you know, and I was really impressed with the presbyterate up there when I was going through there. So, yeah.
And that was probably when you started seminary. That was probably pretty close to 2002?
No, I started seminary in 2005.
2005, okay.
2005, yeah.
So it had already,
hand. Yeah. It already hit the hand, yeah. Yeah, and when I came in there, but I just thought the priesthood recovered. They really rallied amongst each other, you know, and it was Bishop Sean O'Malley at that point in time, and now who's cardinal, but they really rallied behind him, you know, because he had to deal with the aftermath. You
sure.
Know? And I just thought the priesthood really got stronger through the prayer and Holy Spirit.
I think we got an interesting month coming up here in February with the Bishops' Conference and in Rome talking about the current issues and everything. I think it'll be interesting to see kind of how that plays out.
I think so too, you know, and hopefully they'll be praying about it. I'm sure of that, you know, and you know, but so we know that church has always been attacked throughout its entire history, you know, and I'm quite aware of that, you know, and but I think it's still a, you know, it's a divine institution. I remind our people about that all the time. It's just not a human institution. It's a divine institution that our Lord created, you know, and we put our trust in our Lord, and I'm sure our bishops and the cardinals and everybody else will be doing that also, and hopefully come up with some good decision-making during that conference.
So. Yeah, I think that, you know, on a personal level, I've always thought that, you know, for myself, you can tell when you're on the right track, when you're following the will of God, because typically things get worse. Satan doesn't like that.
Exactly.
And I think the same is true, obviously, then for the church, right? For Christ's church is that, to your point, it's a divine institution. And if it wasn't, then Satan wouldn't care.
Exactly.
And he wouldn't attack us and allow us to have these issues and problems that, to your point, hopefully will continue to forge us in the direction in that we're supposed to head, you know, following the will of God.
Continue to grow, I think, in holiness. That's a continual ideal for our church, is to continue to grow in holiness and to continue to try to do the will of God, you know, and we only get there through, you know, obedience ourselves to the will of God, you know, and to continue to grow. I think definitely this is a time period of us growing in prayer. Growing in prayer against, the evil one's having a little bit of his hand at it right now, you know. Now it's time to rally the troops in prayer, you know. But then know that Jesus already said, I will never be conquered, you know.
Sure.
Because he conquered him that on the cross, you know, in his resurrection. So now it's us continue to believe that ourselves and stay strong, you know. One of my favorite lines for me is, speak to truth and love. You know, but that speaking that truth can be a tough thing to do at times. You know, some people don't want to hear the truth at times. You know, and but you just try to do it in a loving way and have those discussions afterwards after you speak the truth. I guess you might say,
yeah. I think a lot of times, and we had a similar conversation a couple weeks ago with a guest, and I think a lot of times we cloud love for ignoring the truth, or, you know, we kind of, we want to sugarcoat it and maybe not, you know, just have those conversations with folks about sinful behavior or what, you know, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And we're not really providing ourselves or them a benefit, when we're not just,
but when we're watering it down,
right,
or sugarcoating it. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and, it's difficult. I mean, there's certain times that, you know, if you're talking about, you know, the ideas, you know, areas of contraception or homosexuality or things like that, you know. And I was just reading an article another day, somebody said, you know, that my deacon sent to me saying, like, you know, is the church just staying silent about these things, or, you know, rather than talking about them and things like that, you know. And I think, you know, we don't talk about it week in and week out, but I think we do talk about it in some appropriate times dealing with scripture or something to that effect. You know, but I still think, you know, we're trying to still love the people we're dealing with when we're talking about those issues. We're not trying to condemn them or anything like that. It's not our job to be condemned. Our job is to be merciful and loving. I mean, that's the job of a priest. And I think if a priest can be merciful and loving, still speak the truth and love, as I stated before, that's what Christ did. You know, Christ, you know, as he talked to the lady who was nearly to be stoned, you know, and says, has anybody condemned you, you know? And she goes, no. I says, well, I don't condemn you either. Go ahead and sin no more, you know? And that's what we as priests are called to do, you know? And but that does take prayer for ourselves to be, because we are priests, are, you know, sinful, you know? Obviously, we know the only one non-sinful is our Blessed Mother and our Lord, you know? And we as priests need to go to confession, and we need to stay strong in our prayer lines and our in reading of the Word, and to know the truth, you know, and that's our challenge as priests, you know, so we can give that information to our people when they start asking questions about it, or where we stand on something, or you think something to that effect.
Absolutely. I would be curious, in 2005, when you started the seminary as a cradle Catholic, what was your perception of how well-versed you had been in the faith? I mean, did you go to the seminary and go, oh my goodness, there's so much that I didn't know? Or did you go and it was kind of a refresher from your years of being raised in the faith?
Oh, it's for me, is complete additional, because I love the nuns. I had the sisters, you know, at the beautiful BVM sisters at Sacred Heart Rock Island, and I don't know if I had the BVM, is that Allman High School? I think Allman High School had them too, you know, but when I went into seminary, it was a complete, for me, you know, a growth in academic knowledge of our faith, you know, and because, you know, growing up in high school and stuff like that, you know, I don't think I have that depth of it, you know. Just going through grade school and high school is more, oh, yeah, okay, I know the commandments. You know, you're supposed to live the commandments. You know, to me, as I talk about, you know, that it was an obligation to live the faith, you know. I learned in a seminary, start loving the Lord and His church and His faith. You know, that's what I began learning in my experience in seminary, you know, because, I grew up with great parents. So you will be at church. We will go into church, you know, and my parents are great. They would tromp us into that church, you know, and all, you know, depending how many we had, seven or eight together or whatever, you know. I don't remember really my parents, you know, sometimes the big families of parents will split them up. No, they didn't split them up. You know, they marched us all in there, and if we got a little out of whack, oh, you got it from dad, you know, and stuff like that, you know, which you should, you know, they're correcting in love. They, you know, maybe not felt like it, you know,
right?
But no, they are just great parents of consistency. I remember my mom taking us to confession on Saturdays. You know, we go to confession on Saturdays. So, but it really was an understanding of learning to as an obligation, you know, and as an adult, I began learning it as love your faith.
Yeah.
Love this Lord that has given us this beautiful church of ours. And that was a growing process that really began, and probably for me around 28 years old.
Yeah.
28 years old, that sort of happened for me, you know, because I always said, tell the kids, you know, as I was that young whippersnapper, when my parents moved to New York, and I was no longer under their guile or their arm or whatever, like that. I tell them from 18 to 28, I was days well of doing things. And it's still the concepts of things I did, you know, like, oh, I never missed Mass on Sunday. But you probably didn't see me in a confessional for 10 years. That's
right.
I tell the kids. And I tell them, you could tell it was a mine. I look at it as a minefield of damage, you know, of nothing serious, because my parents raised great kids. There's one thing we did where we were respectful of adults, we were respectful of actually women, you know, and things like that overall. So I wasn't nearly that abusive maybe in relationships and maybe some other relationships were to a certain point, you know. So I don't think I caused any heinous damage, especially with relationships at that point in time. Now, was I correct in those relationships? Probably not, because that's the one thing I tell everybody. Even though my parents were great parents, raising 10 kids, you never got the whole story. You know, I mean, because they're too busy either working or just keeping in line. Or you never got that father-son talk and things like that, you know, because those are just things that didn't always happen,
yeah.
You know.
You got the son-older brother talk.
Or the kid talking to the high school buddies.
Yeah.
Something like that, which is definitely, for me, a wrong direction to go.
Sure.
But I was in my youth, I was pretty much a follower at a certain point, you know. But the thing about it is my parents moving to New York forced me to get away from that role down the road and start becoming, okay, I had to start making decisions for myself rather than to listen to somebody else or something like that. And took a while, but I finally got it on track. I always like to tell the story of my first period of maturity is when I started off my first semester in college, and it was a beautiful 0.75 grade point average. You know?
Nice. I was pretty strong.
Pretty brilliant,
yeah.
You know, at that point in time, you know. And that was in the fall, and I got a phone call from my mother in December saying, hey, how's it going? I said, oh, it's going great, Mom. I said, yeah. I says, how do you like it down there? I go, I love it. I love being down here. It's just, you want to stay down there? I said, well, yeah, I want to stay down here. He says, you will pass next semester or you will not be staying there. That was just a kick in the butt. I needed to, you know, to start. Okay, time to grow up a little bit, you know, and I passed the next semester with a brilliant, I think it was B, three C's and a D, but that was passing compared to what I was doing, you know. And then it just sort of taken off. I started, okay, yeah, you got to be, get your act together, you know. And I, by the end of my junior college career, I made the president's list a little bit, you know. I got a little smarter and then just started to grow from there a little bit. And that's when the maturity began. To, you know, once again, it was an effect of listening to my parents finally, you know. And, and no, they weren't as dumb or backwards as I thought. I mean, I have a great story about Pontiac, you know, when I was, that I tell everybody, but I don't know if you want to hear that story
or not.
But, you know, in high school, the big thing for all of my high school was go to the Pontiac tournament, you know, and this was my point about maturity, you know, and I, my senior year, I had it all planned, you know, I got my sister's car, I had my buddies all ready to go, and, you know, and all of a sudden, my parents, oh, no, you can't go. Go, well, no, what's up with that? You know, and she said, well, you're just not going. I said, well, being the obedience, okay, I didn't go, I didn't understand it, you know, and that was my senior year. And so here they are, they're moving, you know, and they moved to New York that summer, and I'm on my own. My sister and I get an apartment together. And so now we're in the next fall. Here comes the Pontiac tournament. Well, now I can't go because I don't have any money. I'm a college kid who's struggling, you know. And so I'm in the grocery store working and stuff like that. Here comes some kid walking in. He said, hey, your brother Paul's having a great time down the Pontiac tournament. And I'm just going, this kid flies down. From New York, upstate New York, flies down. And he's only a junior, you know. And my parents are letting him fly down, you know. I'm going like, what the heck, you know. And he had a great time. He didn't stop to see me either, you know. I don't think I even saw him. But I just knew where that was. And as I got older, I figured out why, you know. Because my brother was a lion. He had a spirit of a lion. My dad could trust him. He was dad's right-hand man, too, you know, stuff like that. A little to fast forward to that, stuff like that. Here I am ordained. My first assignment is Pontiac. There's my mom sitting in the pews, you know. And I go, and my final point was, well, Mom, you can't keep me out of Pontiac anymore. Oh, we had the greatest laugh over that. She said, oh, I didn't keep you out of Pontiac. I go, well, somebody did, you know. But it was just their wisdom. I mean, they knew my little brother was a lot stronger than I was.
Yeah.
You know, and they could trust him, you know. I'm finding out the more I, especially when my brother and I talk, I wasn't that trustworthy when I was growing up, you know. And it's just, it was going to learn how their wisdom, I just started picking that up when I got older, in my late 20s and stuff, like how wise they truly were, you know, and they were correct, you know. So that's just a little story.
Yeah.
I told everybody in Pontiac, you know, and but I love the story because it's, I love talking about my parents.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, we're having a great conversation with Father Sable from Pontiac. If you're just tuning in, make sure you go back and listen to the podcast. You can check us out on CatholicSpiritRadio.com or on Podbean or iTunes. We're going to take a quick break. We got to pay the bills. If you want to hear more of Catholic Spirit Radio and Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley, we'll be back after this.
You're listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5.
When your hands are full and you can't reach the radio dial, say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
When you're relaxing after a busy day and need inspiration, say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
When you can't remember the radio station's frequency, say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
It's easy to listen to Catholic Spirit Radio on 89.5 or 92.5 FM. And now you can listen on Alexa. Just say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
Catholic Spirit Radio from TuneIn.
We are back, Catholic Spirit Radio. This is Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley. If you're listening in the great metropolitan of Pontiac, Father Sable is with us today on 88.3. We are so glad to have expanded territory to be able to preach the gospel to and reach out to with our Catholic faith. So welcome all. If you're in Bloomington on 89.5 or 92.5, also great to have you. And if you're passing through listening to Catholic Spirit Radio, we welcome all the guests as well.
I really have enjoyed listening to your guys' station.
Good.
When I'm coming down. Some of those guys in the afternoon are pretty fired up.
Yeah.
I've been finding out the fired up guys a little bit, you know. So that's, I just, been pretty enjoying those guys.
Yeah, the 4 o'clock hour is always an enjoyment for me to listen to as well. So, we can't thank John enough for all the hard work he does. And I know that he loves the accolades. So we'll continue today to smack him on the back. He does a great job.
Oh, he got in from this weather, you know, from good old Eureka. So that's good to see him.
That's right. It's supposed to only get worse as the week goes on, I think.
Yeah. A little bit.
Super cold. We were out of town last week. It was a little bit warmer down south, so it wasn't too bad. It was a shocker coming home. The kids were not happy. They're like, why don't we move? But so again, Father Sable's with us. If you're just tuning in, go back and check out our podcast. I had one other question on your personal story about becoming a priest. Did you think about becoming a deacon at first? I would assume probably kind of at that age range, that would have been the typical path, I guess. We see a lot of guys that become deacons as they get older in life. You know, the kids are out of the house and that kind of stuff. Or did you just know right away as you started thinking about it?
Mine was definitely a call from God.
Oh, okay.
To an answer to my question, because I was going through a little difficult time in my life, you know, and I mean, because there's something I really truly believed in and wasn't seem to be working out, you know, so I was down, I was the youth director for my parish, Our Lady of Guadalupe and Silvis, for 20 years. I was youth director. So I was taking the kids down to one of the youth rallies in Peoria. I said, kids, go ahead, have a great time. I had to go talk to a priest buddy of mine.
Yeah.
And I went over and talked to a priest buddy of mine, and it was a mixture of a confession, you know, and just getting it off.
Yeah.
Wondering where I'm going, you know, asking Lord where my direction is, you know, so. So anyway, and he didn't really have a ton of answers for me. He just let me vent, thing like that, and give me absolution, which was great, you know. And all of a sudden, next day, Sunday, all of a sudden, I got this, I call it my visit from the Lord. I call it a movie I used to see in a movie when I was sleeping. I just saw this thing on my ceiling, you know, of my call, you know. It showed me walking. I was in a classroom of priests, you know, and it's sitting there, and I asked a question, you know, or maybe it was a seminary. I probably was a seminary. Because I was asking if, and I said, if priests are their brothers, how come they don't get along so well? You know, I mean, because I witnessed that a little bit when I was lay person in the Quad Cities, you know, and then all slowly showed me picking up papers that I needed to be able to become a priest, you know, and so. So that was a heck of a wake-up call, you know, and all of a sudden at 4 o'clock in the morning, I woke up saying, hey, I think I better go out and say a rosary. So I went and walking in the good old Silvis, and I was saying a rosary at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, and because it's just a total shock, you know. And then I got down to rosary. I said, all right, Lord, let's do this. And for me, it was an issue of things are always sort of handed to me. You know, my jobs were handed to me. I never had to really interview for jobs. You know, all of a sudden people said, well, you know, here's a job. You know, like I was telling you, Union Plaster 1 year. I was supposed to go work down in Moline for a college break, you know, and I was just playing softball with these bunch of guys. And one of these guys happened to be a guy who ran a plastering outfit. He said, Dave, I saw off your $4 an hour to drive for me. He says, okay. That's what you're going to get, you know, down in the shop. He goes, love it. Take it. So I was offered that job, and I basically became his son because he had 3 girls. And here I come walking on the scene. I'm 18. I'm not 18. I'm older than that, you know, but in my 20s. And I became like his son, you know, and I loved it. You know, I mean, truck ride and worked my way all the way up to doing some plastering for him and stuff like that. You know, so I did that, and so here's an opportunity that I had to decide, my decision. Lord's calling me to become one of his priests. I have to decide. It's no longer, you know, that's okay. You know, this is a tough decision. So this is really a first, to me, it's a first big move because, you know, it's something that I had never even thought about before, you know. And I said, okay, yeah Lord, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. In this time frame, you know, but it took a long time for this process to get going because I had to go through this procedure in order to be able to actually be legally going to priesthood, but it took over 6 years.
Wow.
It took over 6 years for this to get accomplished. And in this time frame, since it took 6 years, I went back to because I thought I was going to get into this pretty quickly, you know, and went through the procedure initially and stuff like that. And when I got my answer back, it said, no, you're not going to be able to go. I go, wow. And a buddy of mine stated that, you know, you went the wrong direction. You should have got a lawyer. And I'm going like, well, no, no, no. God has called me to do this. He's going to figure out how to get me there.
Right.
You know? So I did my normal routine. I appealed things and stuff like that. And then after 3 or 4 more years, they finally got the answer back. Yeah, you can hit move in this direction.
You are a grinder.
Yeah, I am a grinder. But the funny thing is because I had quit my – because I looked at it as this is my plan. Okay, God wants me to do this. I'm going to do this. So, you know, stuff like that. And he goes, all of a sudden, Lord holds me and says, hey, it's not your plan. It's my plan I'm giving you. You're going to go on my time frame, not on your time frame. And so, because I had quit my job, you know, as teaching, you know, and I thought I was all ready to pay my way into the seminary. And I figured it was going to be Holy Apostles in Connecticut. And all of a sudden, I got the word no from my sister. And I says, well, I guess I better get my job back.
Yeah.
And I got my job back. It's pretty easy to get my job at that point in time and teaching kids with behavior disorders. But I said, okay, the God, Lord's going to figure out how to get me there. And so I continued to process, and another 5 or 6 years, and I got my answer, yes, to go into the seminary. So, yeah, that was the call for me to go. But the point about it, the next big point, though, was is when I got the yes in February of 2005, well, I've been going 5 years just sort of doing my own thing, you know, doing the youth group director and things like that. It says, man, am I going to – now I'm 52 years old. Am I going to do this priesthood thing after all this time? You know, I got to second guess, you know. And what I – you know, what I – when I first started a process, I was starting a spiritual direction, you know, with the one of the priests. And when I got the word no, I sort of – stop that, because, well, I said, Father, it doesn't make any sense, you know, to continue on spiritual direction, because I got no.
Right.
Probably wasn't a good move, but at that point in time, I didn't understand it that well in the first place, you know. So when I got the word yes on the process, well, then I jumped back into spiritual direction again, you know. And that's when I talked with Father Jerry Logan and a couple other priests and said, got into the idea, okay, is it going to be a brutal, hard way for me to get through the seminary? And they said no. So anyway, when I got it in after that February in 2005, like I said, I'm praying about it. I said, yep, I'm doing this thing, you know. And you know, it was really was funny that so now that I got my papers, my legal papers, I guess I got to bring this because I'm just but I had to get an annulment for my former marriage. And I keep thinking about that. So, you know, I need to get it out there. It's just something like that. And so I got the annulment through the diocese and everything else, you know. And so now here I am sending this information to 3 major dioceses that my mom was living in Florida, and I just love Florida because golfing is one of my sidelines. Love to golf, and I used
and it's never this cold.
And it's never this cold. Exactly right. And I love visiting my mother, you know. So I did that Venice. And then Ogdensburg, New York, because that's where my brother and my sister live. And my brother and I are very, very close. And Peoria. And I sent letters and an introductory letter with a copy of the annulment. Well, no one's answering me. You know, so I'm happening to visit my mother, you know, and I go, hey, let's go see the diocese. Let's go on up to Venice. There's a Venice diocese. So I just walked in there and I said, yeah, I'm Dave Sable. I want to talk to somebody about possibly becoming a priest for a Diocese of Venice. And I guess the second in charge, I guess, or something like that. And she said, well, how old are you? I said, well, I'm 52. He says, oh, you're too old. And I'm going like.
I thought you couldn't discriminate on the basis of age.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm going like. I'm too old for retirement haven of the world, you know.
Yeah, you're a young man down there.
You know, exactly, you know. And all the deacons who I knew down by my mother said, oh, you talked to the wrong person. And once I start finding out, there's the technical age is around 45 for delayed vocations and stuff like that. So I told my brother in New York, I said, hey, it's up to you. If you want me up there, you need to go check it out, what's going on in Ogdensburg. Well, my brother didn't go do that because I know my brother pretty well. And here I am in Peoria, my whole diocese. I'm going, well, what's going on here? So So I called up Monsignor Brian Brown, who I knew quite well because we'd been on retreats together. I said, Brian, I says, have you got any paperwork, you know, about me coming down there wanting to become a priest? He goes, Dave, I haven't seen a thing. He's a vocations director. You figured to come across his desk, you know. So I think that's the governmental side of anybody, you know, that the paperwork moves slow or something, you know. I said, well, here's a simple story, you know, blah, 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 you know. I told him this, gave a story, and he goes, you know what, Dave? Don't get any older and get down here. I said, all right. So I went down there, and then I talked to Monsignor Stanley Deptula. We had a nice long conversation. I told him the story and said, yeah, Dave, let's go. You got the call. Let's get going. And that was, you know, I was talking with them in July. I made the last interview session with Pope John the 23rd in Boston. I was the last session to be able to get in there. And went up there in Boston. It was great because I ended up being there when all the Archdiocese of Boston was having a party at the seminary. So I got to actually meet some of my classmates, or if I got accepted,
sure.
You know. And I met the rector, who was really a nice guy, who's now a bishop. And so I got there, I guess I interviewed quite well, and I came back home. And as soon as I got home, I had to be at Nazareth House then, when now it's been torn down, getting ready for a new retreat house that they're going to build down the road. And I was supposed to be there, you know, and I had, you know, 4 or 5 hours sleep, you know, and I still got over there to meet these guys, you know, all these young seminarians, and I'll become the oldest seminarian in the house, you know. And all of a sudden I was tired and stuff. All of a sudden one of the guys, somebody says, hey, we're going golfing. What? It just woke me up right there. You know, you mean I can actually go golfing here? He said, oh, yeah, we're going to go golfing because they were on St. Joseph's days, you know. Hey, can I go? Yeah, you can go. I said, all right, great. That just perked me up, got me going with my seminarian brothers. And I've always got along with the young guys pretty well because you know, I knew, like, say, Father Dustin, those guys when they were younger in the first place, you know. So, and so that's how my journey really got going, you know, of becoming a priest. Oh, we were talking about the deacon thing, and the funny story of my when I'd been ordained, one of our former priests, as we're all lined up for me being ordained, you know, I'm fired up, I'm hopped, you know, and stuff like that. I'm ready to go and stuff like that. One of the priests says, "Well, you know what? There's something to be said about the permanent diaconacy." You know, and I got that right off the bat. That was a shot, you know. Apparently, you're old enough to be a deacon, you know. And I just looked at him and go like, but he was the first one to come over to me for a blessing after I was ordained. That was his sense of humor.
Yeah.
It was very cool, you know. But, that's how, that's sort of, it wasn't it was a pretty shocking call.
Yeah.
But it was a challenge for me to say yes, you know. And I've been as happy as I can be that I did say yes. You know, has it been challenging? Oh, yeah. I got seven parishes I deal with right now, you know, and people probably wonder why I don't go nuts or something like that, you know. And I always remember this line that I learned in seminary about Pope John the 23rd. Pope John the 23rd said, when he was the Pope, said, Lord, I'm going to bed. It's your church. Take over. That's sort of been my concept, you know. I mean, I sleep pretty good, you know, and just continue to try to be the best pastor I can be, you know, and learning sort of on job, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I've only been at this for 9 years, and only 4 of it now as a pastor, you know. I had a great, great teacher in Monsignor Tom Mack, who's my first boss, you might say. So I got a good training there, and him and I always talk when I got something coming up yet, things like that, so. It's been a great journey. So, yeah.
It's always a blessing when we get those very clear signs.
Oh, definitely.
And they're so typically, we're probably lucky if we get one really clear sign in our whole life. I mean, it feels like, for myself anyway, that I constantly ask, you know, in prayer, like, what am I doing? What's going, you know, and
well, you know,
how come God can't always just smack us upside the head?
Well, you know, I had one other, and this, as I talked, kind of worked my way around this annulment situation, but when I was dealing with my ex-wife, that was one of the other great signs that I got from God because, you know, I'll get a little straight here. I loved the sacrament of marriage. I loved our marriage, you know. Her and I just did it sort of wrong,
yeah.
Okay? You know, but I didn't get married to get divorced, you know. So here we are going through these struggles and stuff like that. And just one day, I mean, I didn't know what to do. And I took my little dog Molly out, you know, for a walk. And we had this big field behind my house. And I was just sitting there, you know, pretty much just crying. Because I didn't know the direction to move, you know. And all of a sudden, this tremendous, because I'm calling out to the Lord, Lord, you got to give me some help, some guidance here, you know. And all of a sudden, this tremendous peace came over me. I mean, it was just like, whew, exhale, you know. And he said, Dave, this is not your problem anymore. Start living your life like I want you to live your life, you know. And don't worry about her. I've got her. Don't worry. I got her. And that just took such a load off of me. You wouldn't believe. And I went through all the difficulties after that and stuff like that. But I did. I just let it go. Just kept loving her, whatever trial we went through and things like that, and going through the divorce and everything else. I still re-verified my marriage to her and my love for her and left it at that, you know, and still do. And I'm happy and alert for her.
Yeah.
You know, that she is back with our Lord and back with, I hear a great guy, you know, and that's, I'm really happy for her.
Good. Well, we are, again, having a fantastic conversation with Father Sable from Pontiac. Speaking of Pontiac.
Oh, man, it is hopping up there.
I'm a little disappointed. I can only go up there on Thursdays now.
Is that right?
Because Bernardi's only has lunch on Thursdays.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Joe Bernardi's all-you-can-eat lunch. That's
yes,
right.
And it is my favorite.
Yeah, it's pretty darn good. It's one of my
top. DeLong's is good, too.
Yeah.
But yeah. The Bernardi's, you know, buffet.
There aren't too many bad restaurants that I have found
there
in Pontiac.
There's, you know, good ones.
I think all of them have some great menus and great food.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I've been to those, two, and then there's one that's like kind of like a old gas station or something. Like
Edinger's, which is right across from County Market. That's got a gas station feel. But you haven't been to Baby Bull's. It's
That's always my breakfast stuff.
Yeah, oh, definitely. So, definitely, it's the best.
I've had a buddy on from Catholic Financial Life, which is in Milwaukee. And so we'll meet for golf in Pontiac.
Beautiful.
So the next time we're up there, I'll have to let you know. But we do breakfast at Baby Bull's. And I get the skillet smothered in gravy.
Yeah. There you go.
And then we go play golf, and then typically it's a Thursday.
Uh-huh.
And so actually the last time I was there, it was a Thursday. I won a $20 gift card.
All right. There you
which
go.
Which I haven't used yet. So, man, I have to be up there as soon as the weather turns a little
bit. I just re-ripped my clubs because I'm now a pastor, and I've been able to, and I got two great assistants, you know. I got this when I was a layperson. These eight guys or so that I used to play golf with, every year we'd go to Gulf Shores right after Mass on Sunday, and then they'd come back on Saturday. They never missed Mass.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I never was able to go because I was always teaching at that point in time. So I'm the pastor. I think Father Adam can handle this.
Yeah.
So I would say Mass on Sunday myself, you know, and then pick up and meet them in Lincoln, Illinois, and then we go down and I do the fight. That's my little hiatus in the winter.
Nice.
And that'll be coming up in 1 month. So I'll be going down there right before Lent starts. And a little getaway.
So you're pretty good at golf?
Well, you know, I'm blessed in many talents when it comes to sports.
Yeah.
And I know that. I used to be a pretty darn good racquetball player, except my little brother would spank me all the time because I had a weak backhand. But baseball was my game, though. I used to play baseball. I played baseball in college. And now Father Adam, he's a big college player, too, you know, so we have some nice baseball talk and things like that. Of course, I'm a Brewer fan, and he's a Cub fan, so we have to deal with that issue, you know. I feel like physical talents have been blessed with a lot. I mean, I'm not great, but I'm not poor either.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I like playing golf. I'll do any sport that is also a conduit for drinking beer.
Yeah.
My mom was like, oh, when she lived in Colorado, she's like, oh, you can come out and go hiking or mountain bike riding. And I'm like, I can't do either one of those while drinking beer. How about golf, baseball, softball, bowling? I'll do any of those.
Yeah.
Have you been to a Top Golf yet?
I was thinking about actually going up there when I'm going to go do the funeral for my uncle on my way back. There's kids who used to be my former youth directors in the Quad Cities when I had my retreat teams in the Quad Cities. He's now married with four beautiful kids up in Naperville, and there's one in Naperville.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about meeting them there.
It's awesome.
But it is expensive.
Yeah.
Especially in the evening, I'm finding out.
Yeah.
So $45 an hour.
Wow.
It's a evening shot.
I've only ever gone with insurance brokers who pay. So I guess.
Well, it's
a genius move. I mean, it's basic. If you've never been, it's basically a bowling alley feel.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you can just sit around and drink beer. Yeah. But then there's a driving range. It's like bowling with driving range with darts because the games are more similar, almost to kind of like, it's fantastic. Food's great. If you get a chance.
We're thinking about it. It hasn't been cited yet. So actually, I put Brian and his wife in charge of what we're doing with his family. I said, you're in charge. You make the decision. But I'm coming down Monday evening is when I'm coming down. So we'll see.
Well, if you go, you have to let us know how it goes.
You were talking about Pontiac a little bit more.
Yeah.
That St. Mary's is really, I think, popping.
You know,
we're really trying to expand the school. You know, we're started what's called the Catechesis of the Good Shepherd program. I think we're really trying to become more an evangelizing school. You know, and that really works for our teachers, who I think through the gifts of Father Adam Cesarek are really, because obviously I got 6 or 7 parishes. I'm not going to get in the school.
Sure.
His job is to get into school, and he does a great job of it. And he's got our teachers, I think, growing in holiness and is being the great teachers they are to teach our Lord and to teach great academics. And it's really, I think, has grown. And we got a great development staff and Daniel Gill and trying to really grow St. Mary's. Because, granted, you know, you're going to look at it, the population's not growing.
Yeah.
So, where are you going to get your students? We're going to try to get them from our public schools or faith formation programs who don't go to the Catholic school already. So we're trying to become much more inviting and holy and a place you want to bring your kids to because you know they're going to be protected, they're going to be loved, they're going to be taught Christ, and we're going to talk about academics and get involved with their sports programs or any extracurriculars. It's really, I think, we're trying to grow that. And we're also looking at shortly in a major remodel of the school for upcoming programs that we've got planned for. So it's sort of hopping right now a little bit. So, yeah.
As a father who has 4 kids that go to a Catholic school here in town, you know, we've always been huge proponents of Catholic education. And to me, it's always the selling point has always been community.
Mm-hmm. Excellent point.
We took our oldest daughter out of Catholic school for one semester because we had moved, and so everybody was like, "Oh, you know, you're in Tri-Valley now. That's the best school district." And I noticed we'd go to pick her up. Say she had a doctor's appointment or whatever. We'd walk in. You had to go into the office, and then it was okay. You sit down. We'll go get your kid. And there was never any. Yeah, go walk through the halls and come volunteer at lunch and go read stories to the kid or, you know, and I tend to feel like I'm a fairly outgoing person. And she was there for 4, 5, 6 months, you know, half the year, whatever, 4 months or whatever. I didn't meet a single parent.
No kidding.
I mean, there's no community really to public education.
Mm-hmm.
It's you send us your kids. We're going to teach them whatever you want or whatever we want. And we're going to send them back.
Mm-hmm.
Catholic school, that's where Catholic schools miss the boat when it comes to really selling the product, which is the fact that it's a community of believers. It's a community of parents raising their children in a similar belief. You know, I'd say there's probably not a parent that I don't know, at least having met, and there's, you know, vast numbers of parents that, you know, my wife and I go out with on the weekends or after, you know, school events or it's a family community. And I think a lot of times we get caught up in the, oh, well, is the education better? Are the academics better here or are the academics better there?
Exactly.
And it's Catholic Schools Week, and the school asked me, you know, to put a statement. So I don't know if they were putting it on the website or in the bulletin or whatever. And I said, you know, as parents, what's most important on our deathbed? Is it that we have a comfort in knowing that our children were educated in academics to the best and they became doctors and lawyers? Or is it a comfort in knowing that we taught them the faith and they were raised in the faith with love and that we have a supreme confidence that they will
you know, see their maker in salvation.
Exactly.
And to me, hopefully at 90 years old or whenever that happens, yeah, I can look back and go, my five children, I feel comfortable in knowing that they're on a path to heaven. I don't care what they're...
And it's a path that they're sharing their faith, because we're not just supposed to know the faith. We're supposed to live it, too,
yeah,
which means try to give it to somebody else. And that's what we're trying to get into our kids. That, you know, even you're a young age, you're a disciple, you know? As soon as we decide we're going to get baptized into the life of Christ, we're all disciples. And this is what I've been trying to talk... We've been talking to even our adults.
Yeah.
Because you know how it sort of has been. I mean, when we were growing up, you didn't have to worry about it. There's Catholics all over the place. The churches were full, things like that. Well, that ain't like that anymore. And I mean, and that's where Satan's probably had a little bit of his way here a little,
yeah,
bit, you know? Parents have gotten caught up so much in the world, and,
yeah,
man, I got to make my dollars and, you know, or whatever. And they have forgotten you're supposed to be making a saint.
Yeah.
You know, making your child into a saint. That's your trip to the heavenly kingdom.
Right. The rest doesn't matter.
Exactly. Exactly. And we're trying to, I think we're starting to get a message out a little bit. I just see, especially through our teaching staff, that attitude is really starting to expand out into the parents.
Yeah.
So that's beautiful.
And I think to your point, not only parents, but I think to some extent the church has gotten caught up in the world too. And to your point earlier, mm-hmm, about speaking the truth in love, I think a lot of times even the church itself has kind of watered things down to where it's no longer, you know, it's not entertainment on Sunday. And, you know, we Protestant churches especially, you know, I mean, mm-hmm, I know there's a fairly good sized one here in town that I've been to. There's not even a cross.
Oh, yeah.
And but there's a rock band. And you know, maybe the Catholic Church isn't that far. But I think if you look back, you know, 50 years ago as compared to today, it's definitely somewhat more, you know, oh, well, we have to have the right music and Father has to do a really good homily. And the last time I checked, we were there for the Eucharist.
Exactly.
And it doesn't matter if Father gives, I don't care if Father gives a homily at all, if the Eucharist is there. And I don't care if we have songs or not have songs. I don't care if I like the songs or don't have songs, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think there's, you're absolutely right. It definitely parents shoulder a huge burden of that. But I also think that the church itself has tried to accommodate maybe more than she should have.
It's a possibility. Yeah. And I don't notice that so much because I haven't been around that long to really catch that out of the entire church, you know, but, I know our priests that I have working with me really do, I think, try to speak to the issues of the day and really try to – we promote to our parents, be strong about your faith.
Yeah.
Be strong. Don't be afraid of it. Don't be like you're hurting somebody's feelings, you know, or anything like that, because if you're just telling them what you believe in, but you're loving them when you do it, they may not like it, but they're still going to listen to you.
Yeah.
I think it's still going to listen to
it. Well, and to your point, and, you know, obviously the last week or two, we've had this you know, Covington Catholic thing. And, mm-hmm, and so those are children.
Exactly.
That have been attacked on social media, mm-hmm, not even for espousing their faith, other than just being present at a pro-life march.
Exactly.
Which
is a great thing that they did, you know?
Absolutely. But to your point about even adults, right, and in the workplace or even with their children, or I think there's so much fear and like, well, how am I going to be accepted, or how is this going to be understood? You know, am I going to become, you know, the bigot or the whatever, you know, well, whatever the buzzword of the day is.
Christ said, though, they're going to persecute you just like they persecute,
yeah,
me. You know, I mean, you can tell the straight truth and love and some people, they don't want to change, or they're not ready for it or whatever, and they're going to give you a hard time, or it's, you know, you're telling them something that they're maybe, I'll say, hey, I'm doing that, you know, or whatever, but they're not going to always accept it, you know,
yeah.
So, but you got to be ready to know that, yeah, you're going to be persecuted like Christ, you know, and that's a challenge for me.
Sure.
I mean, remember, I've only been 9 years. I mean, and so, but I've been a lay person for a heck of a lot longer than that,
yeah,
you know, and so I had that lay person attitude, you know, that, well, it's up to the priest.
Yeah.
You know, it's not up to me to talk about my faith or anything like that, you know. Yeah. Well, now no, that's not true at all. It wasn't true back then either. Yeah. I just didn't know it. I didn't believe it or didn't understand it. You know, well, now I understand it. And that's what we're trying to get across to our people that, yeah, through the grace of God, you can be, talk about your faith.
Yeah.
You just, like John Paul II says, do not be afraid. You know, our Lord says, I'll give you, if you want to talk about me, I'll give you the strength to do so, you know. But talk about me in what you know. Don't make up anything, right. You know, and just speak about what you know that is true. And be strong conviction about it in love, and you'll be fine. It is, I think, shocking just because I used to be at a point, I don't know if I should say something. But when I finally started saying something, the reaction was completely different than what I expected. I expected out of fear that maybe I would get a negative reaction where all of a sudden, no, I didn't get a negative reaction. I got a positive reaction, you know. So it's that's something that we all have to learn through, you know. Speaking the truth in love, you're not going to get always going to get a negative reaction.
Yeah.
You know, people might start thinking about it, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a good thought, you know. So.
And we never know in what ways the Holy Spirit's going to work mm-hmm. with those seeds of, you know.
I mean, I got it within my own family. I love my family, but I got some challenges within my own family about the faith journey, you know. And, but I tell them in love, you know, that, and I'm not always agreeing with them either, you know. But I still love you. You're my niece or you're my nephew and things like that. My godson is always my godson, Josh. I just love him to death. But he was working social services. So he sees, in his idea, he sees, well, church has got all this money. You think it could use it for better things, you know, like you don't know it's one of the biggest charitable organizations in the world, you know, and things like that. But he said, I disagree with some of the church's teaching. I go, oh, yeah. I says, well, what are you doing about it? Well, nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Do something about it. Either find out the answers or something like that. Don't think you know the answers. Because one of the famous things, I think Father Adams stated at a certain point about, you know, one of the greatest misconceptions at a certain point is Catholics who think they know the truth don't actually know the truth.
Yeah.
Something to that effect, you know. And there's a lot of Catholics out there like that, you know, or a lot of people out there think they know it, but they don't actually do know it because they're listening to people, you know, maybe not even to a priest or whatever else, you know, rather than, you know, pick up the catechism, find out the answer in there. That's where, you know, the thousands of years of, you know, church teaching has been molded into that catechism, you know, and that's the wisdom of the church, you know, to find out what's going on.
And I think a lot of times, to your point, Catholics will say, well, I don't agree with this one thing or these two things or whatever. The church believes X, Y, Z. And in my experience, when you really take the time to learn why the church believes X, Y, Z, it becomes crystal clear why.
Exactly.
Why the church feels that way.
Mm-hmm.
And for the times that I've ever thought, oh, well, I'm not sure that I agree with whatever topic it might be, when I've taken the time to understand why the church teaches that, then it's like, oh, yeah, I mean, obviously I should agree with that. That's
sure.
a beautiful teaching of mm-hmm. the faith.
Exactly, yeah.
So, again, we appreciate you you being here. We've been talking to Father Sable from Pontiac and all the other parishes up in the metropolitan Pontiac. You've been listening to Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5, Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley.
You've been listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the generous support of Meyer Bramley Insurance, serving Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas. Meyer Bramley Insurance can be reached online at mbi.agency or via phone at 844-890-2626. Catholic Conversations, where we talk about faith, family, and finance. Download our podcasts at CatholicSpiritRadio.com.